It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Milwaukee is known as one of the most segregated cities in America, but a new UW-Milwaukee Center is hoping to change that and help the city and state thrive with new strategies in municipal planning.
The Center for Equity Practice and Planning Justice aims to help solve racial segregation problems with zoning reform and innovative development.
Kirk Harris is the center's inaugural director, a certified planner, and an associate professor at UW-Milwaukee in the Department of Urban Planning. Kirk, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Well, before we dig into the issue, can you talk us through the main goals of this new Center for Equity, Practice, and Planning Justice?
Absolutely. So in 1954, Brown v. Board of Education outlawed segregation in America. And the challenge that we have today is that we're as segregated now as we were in 1954, if not more so. We know that there are a number of reasons for that. One is that we've had housing policies that have contributed to the inequalities associated with opportunities related to housing. We've had infrastructure development and urban renewal, which has deconstructed communities and displaced communities in ways that have heightened segregation. We have economic development practices that exacerbate the problem. And then we have zoning, which continues to manifest inequalities as a result of the inability to create diverse housing and also affordable housing. So all of these things in combination have magnified the problems. And we as planners historically have, have contributed in some ways to these problems by failing to consider all of the practices and policies that have segregated America, and we have woefully short strategies for addressing the problems. So we find ourselves in a reality in which segregation is the order of the day, if you will, in our urban settings.
And that's a point I want to stick with a little bit. I think if you grow up in a city or visit a city, you just think, well, that's where the road is, and that's the black neighborhood, and that's the white neighborhood, and it just sort of happened that way. Can you talk about how planning decisions, conscious decisions in many cases, led to some of the biggest segregation problems we have now?
First of all, let me just say, zoning as a part of the planning practice has been historically the fundamental thing that has contributed to the problem, along with the fact that we created a housing policy strategy that has suburbanized America in ways that actually allowed the out-migration of the white population from cities and have kind of trapped, if you will, communities of colors inside the cities. And at the same time, those resources that are necessary to contribute to the well-being and sustainability of the cities were drained as populations of the white community moved out. We as planners in some ways contributed to that because historically we have not necessarily challenged, and I don't think that's true today, but I think historically we did not necessarily challenge these racially motivated practices which essentially intentionally segregated communities. Today we're a lot better as a practice, and we know that there are a number of things that we have to work on in order to ensure that this doesn't continue. So, for example, the city of Milwaukee has been visiting this idea of growing Milwaukee, and the idea is to advance zoning practice in ways that contribute to more affordable housing, diverse sets of housing, and which creates an opportunity for inclusive housing. I think that's an important first step. It's a necessary step, but it's not a sufficient step in ensuring we can address these longstanding problems. The truth is that if we look at the ways in which our lending practices are taking place in our cities, even today, in terms of how that is manifesting, we still see inequities emerging from these things. So we're working against the tide of practices and regulatory schemes that have historically kind of reinforced segregation.
Now, a key word in the name of this new agency is practice. What are you going to do to make sure that this isn't, an academic thing for academics, something that is actually working with city planners and making things change in the real world?
Well, first of all, you have to have a diverse set of stakeholders at the table. You have to have the city, the regional planning agency, You have to have local organizations. You have to have organizations that are, in fact, working on health issues. You have to have organizations that are working on education issues, because any issue that you find where there's growing inequality in cities all stem back to segregation. And it touches everything. It touches everything from economic development and our environment, or housing, education. It touches health. It just touches everything, which means that we have to have a set of committed stakeholders and strategic partners. And over the last year, I have actually been able to assemble a really impressive group of strategic stakeholders. And and what's interesting about that assemblage is that when I present this idea to the folks that I've been talking to, there is a level of commitment and excitement about addressing this. And you mentioned practice. So yes, we are sitting in an academic institution, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, but we already know a lot about why we're segregated. We don't need to know any more about why we're segregated. But what we're woefully short on is the practices that will lead us down the road that will address this problem. And so I have three kind of areas of work that I think is going to be really important for doing that. First, innovative planning practices. We have to examine the ways in which we've engaged in community economic development, the ways in which we've invested in communities, the ways in which we incentivize certain activities in cities to ensure that we're not replicating the very problems that are built into this highly segregated society. Secondly, we have to look at the regulatory schemes, zoning, and other issues that have historically lent themselves to the problem and recognize that they're integrated with, issues around market forces that have contributed to the high levels of segregation in cities. And so we have to recognize that while we're working on zoning issues, we also have to work on how do we create more affordable housing? What are some additional partners outside of the traditional market that we can leverage for purposes of doing something different in terms of housing? There's lots of innovative strategies, for example, that are emerging around land trust, and which is a strategy for communities taking control over their land in ways that don't allow them to it be a part of the speculation that leads to displacement, and which has historically been a challenge in many communities. Gentrification is a big issue. And then finally, looking at the narrative that we have around inclusive communities, we have curated in our society an understanding that diverse communities are not communities that lend themselves to increase property values and, in fact, lend themselves to decline and problems. And I think we have to change that narrative. I think we've curated it in our society as a function of law, practice, and policy. And now we have to create new opportunities for having different kinds of conversations about what does it mean to have an inclusive community, and what do inclusive communities look like, and what do they contribute to the overall sustainability and fabric of our society. And so those are the kind of broadly the three areas that I think that the center is going to work on. And from my perspective, practice is at the heart of it, meaning it's not about just what we know, it's about what we do.
We're talking to Kirk Harris, inaugural director of the new Center for Equity, Practice, and Planning Justice at UW-Milwaukee. Kirk, the physical layout of cities, so many cities, Milwaukee included, have histories where a new highway, say, or other infrastructure project was run right through what had been a thriving, in many cases, Black neighborhood, or creating physical barriers between Black and white neighborhoods. To solve some of these problems we're talking about, do we need to change some of the physical layout, the infrastructure of a city?
First of all, let me just kind of reflect a little bit about on that history. That history was driven by urban renewal. And urban renewal was fueled by what was happening in the cities where white communities were fleeing the city. We were losing investment in the city. We were seeing decline as a result of that lost investment. And then we saw our cities, particularly around our urban core, in disarray, largely because of the lack of resources and investment. So the urban renewal sought to solve a problem that it created. And so the highways were just a mechanism for continuing that because they facilitated the in and out migrations of those communities from the suburban fringe into the cities. By the way, economists call that a free rider problem. That is, you use the infrastructure of the city, you move in and out of on that infrastructure, but all your tax dollars go somewhere else. And so these are the kinds of tensions that exist and that are manifest in kind of what we call structural racism, because what they do is they create this racial hierarchy that benefits one group over another. And infrastructure has historically, highways in particular, infrastructure has been historically a mechanism by which not only do we create these separations, we actually destroy communities as a function of the desire to intensify the segregation. And so this is really a problematic history, and we're living with it now because many of those highways still exist in communities which are creating that separation, and they create boundaries which to this day mitigate the opportunities for certain communities to benefit from the amenities and other attributes of the city.
I understand, Kirk, there's a lack of diversity historically in the planning profession. Is that part of your mission at the new center?
Absolutely. In fact, I've been teaching planning for over 20 years. And what I've seen over the course of my years is that we've done better in moving communities of color into planning. But there is just much, much, much more work to do. It's interesting because even as my students who are not necessarily people of color, they themselves recognize and have critiqued the fact that the planning profession needs to do better in that regard. And that's promising because if they themselves are doing that, then they can become advocates for that in the practice as they move into it. And, you know, we need to increase the pipeline of students of color into the planning world. And one way that the center wants to do that is look at ways in which we can get in contact and make contact with high school students who we might work with and say, hey, there's things happening in your community. What do you like about what's happening in your community? What don't like about what's happening in your community? Would you like to work on a project that works on those things to improve outcomes in your community that you're concerned about? And so connecting to them and getting them to think about the communities in which they live and thinking about the ways in which they can influence outcomes in those communities becomes a very important part. And it creates a pipeline for those students into the university and into the planning profession.
And finally, Milwaukee, known as one of the most segregated metropolitan areas in the country, seems like a major task trying to tackle it. Does it ever feel too big to take on?
Let me just say, planners are optimists. we envision a future. And we envision a future in which we have sustainable, equitable, and vibrant cities. And so I never feel daunted by the fact that the problems are big. What I'm feeling encouraged by, particularly in Milwaukee, is the level of embracement and support and concern that I've gotten across a wide range of stakeholders. And with that kind of support, we can do all kinds of things. And the truth is that, I grew up in the 60s and I witnessed the urban unrest in Newark, New Jersey. And one of the things that I recognized is that there's a legacy of work that has been done by folks who went before me. And as a lawyer and a planner, I'm mandated to keep that movement going. And one of the legacy that I'm hoping that this center manifests is a legacy which really continues to challenge the orthodoxy which has historically been in place around our planning practices. And I'm never discouraged because, one of my favorite Black intellectuals, Cornel West, says, we have to find joy in the struggle because the struggle is all around us, and we recognize that the problem didn't occur overnight and it's not going to be solved overnight. But if we can get the committed people in the room having the right kinds of conversations, talking about the equitable outcomes and the democratic outcomes that we want to see in our society, anything's possible. And as much as Milwaukee is one of the most highly segregated cities in the and regions in the country, I can also say that over the course of, of this year, as I've been building toward this center, the level of accessibility and willingness of people to have conversations has been amazing. And so I'm tremendously hopeful, and the joy is in the struggle.
Kirk, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Kirk Harris is the director of the new Center for Equity Practice and Planning Justice at UW-Milwaukee. He's an associate professor there in the Department of Urban Planning.